I think the natural progression of growing into a proper awareness of Christmas is, as a child, you know, it's all about the merchandise, the toys, and the people around you are great too, but that is almost like lost in the toys. And then after a while, the toys start to decline in their importance to you, and the people around you start to increase in their importance to you. And then after that, a lot of people get stuck. But there's more. After that, you're supposed to realize the spiritual significance of what's going on. And I think most people sort of do. But sometimes they resist it. Sometimes they just don't step over the edge and really get spiritually what's happening. And I find that to be interesting. I wanted to remind you about Isaiah's prophecy about Emmanuel. And this is in chapter 7 of Isaiah. In verse 14, you know it very well. The Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. So what's so great about this, if you can picture this, the first Christmas message about the virgin birth was given to a very, very bad king, Ahaz. He's very bad. As a matter of fact, the Bible says that he was such a horrible king that he actually killed some of his own baby children. So we are talking about a very, very bad man here. Isaiah is dispatched to talk to Ahaz because Ahaz has three enemies, the 10 northern tribes of Israel coming against him in Judah. He has the king of Syria coming against him from Syria. And he has the Assyrians coming against him. He has three enemies and he's afraid. And so Isaiah comes to him and says, I have a message to you from God. And essentially Ahaz says, I care nothing about a message from God. And so Isaiah leaves him after his first interview. And in that first interview, here's what he says in chapter 7, verse 9. Isaiah says to King Ahaz, if you will not believe, you shall not be established. I love that. If you're not going to believe, then you can't have any stability. You can't have any security. King Ahaz, you have to believe. So Isaiah was sent back again, and this time with the Christmas message. Isaiah says, God will give you a sign. You name whatever sign you want from heaven above, from earth beneath, name whatever sign you want. And Ahaz isn't interested. As a matter of fact, he probably has already made other arrangements for the armies to fight, and he's not interested. So Isaiah says, thus says the Lord, since you are going to weary me by not caring, by neglecting, then I'm going to give you my own sign. And that's when he said, behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son. His name is going to be Emmanuel. So the Lord gave his own sign. And I just love that. You see, the first interview has Isaiah saying, if you won't believe, you can't have security. And the second one is the Christmas sign, the Christmas miracle. Behold, a virgin shall conceive. And they're together. It's one episode in King Ahaz and Isaiah's life. And so I was thinking about that interesting thing of belief. And if we won't believe the Christmas story, if we won't believe the gospel story, then there is no security. You can't be stable. You can't be established. And it's so interesting because all the people around us sometimes teeter. It's like they're almost ready to believe, but not quite. And I was thinking about all the Christmas stories and Christmas movies that talk about belief. And I was reminded that people seem to be reaching out and trying to find faith, especially at Christmas time. And they don't sometimes do it. They don't just step over the edge like they should. They're so close, they just don't. And think about the Christmas stories that are like this. For example, there is this story of a little girl in 1897 named Virginia. And you might know her story because it's exceedingly popular. 1897, little Virginia is talking to her father about the reality of the existence of a certain mythical Christmas character. And her father says, well, why don't you call the New York Post or write to the New York Post in their question and answer column and ask them the question, does this make-believe character exist? And he says, well, whatever they say is true. So she wrote this to the newspaper and their question and answer column. I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no such person. Papa says If you see it in the New York Sun, it's so. So she's saying, please tell me the truth. He wrote back to her in the question and answer column of the New York Sun. And it's so great. Listen to the theme of belief, even though we're talking about, you know, make believe. Listen to the theme of belief as people grasp after faith in the Christmas season. Virginia, your little friends have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except they see. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect in his intellect as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, he exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no such person. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in the world. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there is nothing else real and abiding. Is that interesting? You see them just grasping after faith. That story so captured Americans everywhere that it was published every single year in the New York Sun until 1959, when the newspaper went out of business. Every single year they reposted that. You're not many of you old enough to remember this, but in 1974, a new animated Christmas show came out on that very subject, and it's now a classic Christmas special. In 1997, on December 21st, exactly 100 years after that was first published in the New York newspaper, there was another article, this time in the New York Times, about how that has captured the American mindset, that they're trying to believe. And the question is, should we believe in anything like this? And the answer is, oh, yes, that might be the most real thing in all the world. And I love that. You know what Jesus said? He said one time, if I'm lifted up, I'll draw all people to me. It's that intuitive sense that we have that this is real. This whole Christmas thing about the baby in the manger and the Lord being with us, dying for our sins, being raised again after 3 days, that whole thing is so real. And we try to brush it off. Sometimes our friends and neighbors, our unbelieving loved ones, try to brush it off. But it seems like we can never really get away with it. John, in his gospel, opens up and he says, you know, this is the true light that lights every man that comes into the world. It's like this intuitive sense. When Paul was preaching one time, he said, if haply they might feel after him and find him, because he is not far from every one of us. And I just love that, that at Christmas time, we neglect so many things throughout the year. But at Christmas time, we settle down. We think, you know what? This stuff is really real. The gospel of Jesus is important. As a matter of fact, it's more real than anything else. And our popular culture all around us reminds us of that. Miracle on 34th Street. You know the movie. 1947, the original. It's because we just finished World War II in 1945. So the war was over, but there was so much healing left to do. And what's great about that story, you know, it's obviously set in New York in December. It tends to be cold outside in December. And there was somebody else in the story that was cold too, Doris Walker. Remember the little girl's mom. And somehow, you know, 1947, it didn't happen that often. But somehow she had been divorced. We don't know how it happened. But we only find out that she was divorced. And now she's a single mom. And she's been burned. And she doesn't want to get burned again. And her heart is cold. And the whole story is about how we're going to make her heart warm again. And she has to come to believe. And she doesn't want to believe. She doesn't want to trust. But she has to come to believe. And the little girl, Sarah, what does she want at the end of the movie? She wants a new house. A new house. a new family, a new start. She wants to have the more meaningful things in life. And she wants to bring her mom along to believe that. And that's the way the story ends. In the newer version, not so new anymore, but 1994, they have this great montage toward the end of the movie. They're coming to the climax, and this gospel song, gospel choir, starts singing Joy to the World. And I mean, it's big, you know, Joy to the World, and swelling sounds. And if you don't want to stand up and shout when you watch it, you know, you're broken. And so they start singing Joy to the World, like with all enthusiasm. And then you start seeing the people all around you, New York, saying, I believe. And the montage, you just go from one to the other. You go to the cafe and there's this menu board and it says specials and it says grilled cheese. And then it says Irv and Joanne believe. And then you see the Goodyear blimp up there flashing a sign, we believe Goodyear. And you see a city sign, like a construction sign. It says, city workers, we believe. And you see in the window of a condo, this little girl named Rebecca has put a poster. It says, Rebecca believes. And then you look out of the courthouse window and down below, all of these people, so many people are standing there outside the courthouse saying, we believe. And all down the street, we believe. It gave me chills when I saw it for the first time, because that's what this is about. I mean, not exactly what the movie is about, but I imagine, what if all the world would stand up and say, we believe the Christmas story, we do believe. And you see that they're grasping after it. They're so close. They know that somehow this is important, that we have to believe. And then they miss it at the end. It's so sad. But for us who believe, that all has deep, profound significance. And I love that. We just can't get away from it. People tend to kind of get away from it, but at Christmas time, they're sort of face to face with it. I read some years back that Madeline Murray O'Hare, the famous atheist from the 1960s, was asked one time, is your faith in atheism ever rattled at all? And she said something like, sometimes when I hear those Christmas songs, is that interesting? You're just toying, trifling, you're at the cusp of faith, and then you never step over the line. And Isaiah stood before King Ahaz, and he said, well, if you don't believe, you can't be established. You're not going to ever be secure. You're never going to be stable. You've got to believe when the Lord tells you that a thing is so. All right, so one more Christmas story. This one is a little bit newer, 2004, the Polar Express. What's great about the Polar Express is not only that it has great trains, which is such an integral part of Christmas, as you know, but you also have this belief theme from start to finish. And there's this one time when the conductor is talking to the main character, Boy, and they're on the train, and the conductor tells the boy, seeing is believing. But sometimes the most real things in the world are the things we can't see. See, that's coming close to what Isaiah said. If you won't believe, you can't be established. You can't be secure. You can't be stable. You have to believe. And that's almost what the conductor says. And you see the world just grasping after. They're so close to the gospel message, so close to the real meaning of Christmas, standing on their tiptoes right on the edge of the cliff and sometimes never stepping off into the wonder of Christmas. The signature song is very powerful. I mean, they don't mean it to be gospel, but it just sort of is. When you believe what we believe, listen to the words of the song, the signature song. It says, and by the way, the title of the song, Believe. Listen to what it says. Children sleeping, snow is softly falling, dreams are calling like bells in the distance. We were dreamers not so long ago, but one by one, we all had to grow up. And then this, when it seems the magic has slipped away, we find it all again on Christmas Day. That's what the world is doing. It's like, you know, trying to get away from it, and you just can't. And then comes Christmas Day, you think, I just can't get entirely away from it. The chorus of the song, Believe in what your heart is saying, because remember Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all people to me. I will. The apostle said, when the Gentiles which have not the law do by nature the things contained in the law, it's in their hearts. They just do it by nature. It's natural. It's this intuitive sense. This is the true light that lights every man that comes into the world. And so the Course says, believe in what your heart is saying. You know, listen to that still small voice. Hear the melody that's playing. There's no time to waste. There's so much to celebrate. Believe in what you feel inside and give your dreams the wings to fly. You have everything you need if you just believe. It's Isaiah. He says, if you don't believe, you can't be established. You can't be secure. You can't have stability. You've got to believe. And then the second stanza, one more time. It says, trains may move quickly to their journey's end. Destinations are where we begin again. When it seems that we have lost our way, we find ourselves again on Christmas Day. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and you'll call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. In that movie, the last lines that are spoken by the Tom Hanks character are about a bell, a Christmas bell, that only believers can hear. The rest think that the bell is broken. They can't hear it. But the believers hear it. And so the last lines sound like this. The boy has grown up. And he says, at one time, most of my friends could hear the bell. But as years passed, it fell silent for all of them. Even Sarah found one Christmas that she could no longer hear its sweet sound. Though I've grown old, the bell still rings for me, as it does for all who truly believe. That idea of belief is just shot through the Christmas traditions, even the ones that don't want to feature the gospel. But for us who do believe, the sweet sound of the bell rings for us. We get it. We know what Christmas is all about. And so we graduate from the toys when we're children to the relationships, uncles and aunts and cousins and grandpas and grandmas and everybody, the relationships. But then we have to keep going, because the next big jump in your maturation is when you realize that Christmas is even more than the relationships of the human beings that you love around you. Christmas is about this thing deeper than any other. A virgin will conceive and bear a son. And you'll call his name Emmanuel, which means God is with us. That there is going to be hope and life. And when your loved ones, your aunts and your uncles and your grandparents, when they all go away, because people always go away, when they all go away, what really matters is that there was a baby born in the manger. Isaiah said, behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son. But if you don't believe, you can't be established. And that's what we're doing here on Christmas Eve night.